This is the Spin Axis Podcast, and I sound like an old-timey radio personality.
It's fantastic.
I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
This week, we're going to do kind of a, we called it quickie equipment topics. I don't know what I'll call it eventually, but that's what we're calling it internally here. So we each picked one topic that is equipment-based that we wanted to talk about. I'm going to lead off, and I picked the topic of mini drivers. Okay, I've recently, well, last fall, I got a mini driver, but this has been the first chance I've had to really use it a lot. And I swear, it feels like cheating. The thing is so easy to hit. I'm not going to say what brand, because I think they're all pretty much the same. I've hit a bunch of different brands.
Titleist.
It's still a small head for a driver. Yeah, you can say whatever, but no.
Yeah.
It's still a small head for a driver, right? But it's bigger than a three wood. And the thinking behind it for me is this. There's maybe one hole where I need to hit three wood off the fairway. Maybe. And I can get away with, I've hit six iron into this hole. I've hit hybrid. I've hit five iron, four iron, et cetera. So I don't even need three wood most of the time on that hole. And I mean, in Erie County, there's one hole where I need to hit three wood. Maybe two, depending on the wind on this other course and another hole. But if I'm hitting three wood off the tee five, six, seven times in a round, because the fairway pinches at 280 and a mini driver leaves me at 255 and I'm well short of that bunker and it doesn't pinch in, whatever, right? I don't run through the fairway. I don't run into the creek. You know, it's far enough where I have a wedge or a nine iron in and it doesn't introduce a bunch of trouble. Why would I need to carry a three wood? And I think a lot of players these days are finding that they don't need to hit three wood very often, except off the tee.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to hit it off the tee, just get yourself a 43 inch, right? Minus 43 inches. You can go 42 and a half. You do not need a long mini driver or else you're going to find it yourself hitting it as far as your driver.
Yeah.
And you haven't done anything. Get yourself a mini driver. If you find yourself never needing to hit three wood off the deck, it makes the game easier. It feels like cheating.
I've said to some people, because this has become a pretty popular trend, right? That those clubs are so good. I personally haven't hit one yet. I don't, you know, play a ton of golf at this stage in my life, but I have so many players that do have put one in the bag. And I say to them, you know, I don't know when a three wood just became a part of our set, but at some point in golf, a three wood was just, that was, you know, you went driver three wood. And one of the things that I say to so many people, most players don't hit three wood very good anyways off of the deck. Right.
I think the three wood is the toughest club to hit.
It's so hard.
It's got a small head.
That's right.
It's a long shaft. It's not quite as long as the driver, but the driver has a big head.
Yeah.
And it's on the ground usually or 100%. Barely teed up. A driver is at least teed up in the air.
There's not a lot of loft.
The three wood is the toughest club to hit. There's not much loft. Right.
It's very difficult. This face is shallow. And like you said, if I only have one of those off of the deck and my chances of hitting a good one are less than 50-50, then why would I have that in my bag? I'm actually pretty interested in hitting some of those myself, and hopefully it feels like cheating for me too.
Yeah, they're amazing. The nice thing that I like the mini driver too is that for golfers, better golfers, not saying anyone can't take advantage of this, but if you get set for your driver and you hit your driver with a little bit of a fade, get your mini driver to be able to hit a little bit of draw off the tee, so that when you get to that hole that needs the draw, you don't have to change your driver swing, right? You just drop back a little bit to that mini driver. Now you can hit that draw and you don't lose spin rates from going from your cut swing with your driver down your high or down your three wood or mini driver, right? And then the same thing, the amount of times I do playing lessons with people and, you know, I'm just looking at their bag. I'm like, how often you hit that club? I haven't this year. Or maybe last year, I can't remember. I'm like, you're just carrying around, you're just trying to work out, like get it out of your bag. Go fill it with something that you're going to use. And yeah, absolutely. If you need another club off the tee that's 20, 30 yards, a little bit shorter, that you feel more confident with, because again, it's got a bigger head versus your three wood. Yeah, throw that in the bag. It's a no brainer for sure.
Eric, what did you say the loft is on yours?
13 and a half, which
okay.
I'm almost tempted to go up to like 14
okay.
or so.
Yeah.
So it goes, and that's part of the reason why I cut it down shorter than what standard is. I love how manufacturers will sell a mini driver, but then make it go almost as far as a driver, because oftentimes a lot of players need a little bit more loft anyway.
Sure.
So oftentimes players get a mini driver and it goes as far as their driver because they launch it with better launch conditions for them. But
Yeah.
For me, you know, I know my thing and I can vary the height by playing it back in my stance a little bit and doing some different things to change the height and stuff. But I love that it puts enough backspin on the ball that it's tougher to tilt the spin axis, so it doesn't curve very much. It's a big enough head. You tee it up just a little bit, you know, at 3/4 of an inch or so. So you have a little bit of height forgiveness on the face to not drop kick it. And it's short enough. I mean, there are a lot of PGA Tour players who play a 44 or a 44 and a half inch driver.
Absolutely.
For the same reason. Because if you can hit it on the center of the face, you might give up 1 mile an hour or 2 miles an hour of clubhead speed. But if your smash factor goes from 1.44 to 1.49 because you hit the center of the face way more often, you get more ball speed.
Yep.
Yep.
Name and so the game. With the mini driver, I can get surprisingly good ball speed for a 13 and a half degree head that's 43 inches. You can flush it pretty well all the time.
I'd love for the listeners out there when they hear this to send us some feedback. If you've put a mini driver in the bag, you know, what's your experience with it? Because of all the players that I've talked to that put one in the bag, they all sort of have the same feedback as you. I've yet to find somebody who's like, oh, that, I don't know why I bought this thing. It's terrible. Right. Everybody loves it, you know, and I've heard the same thing. It's like, man, it feels like cheating. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I think if I remember right, I think this year's model is going to be 300 cc's. So even if you want it to be a little bit bigger, you can go test both out, right? See if you like the, you know, little smaller head or a little bit bigger head.
This year's model of what, Jason?
Titleist clubs.
Yeah. With a smirk on his face as he says it.
Yeah.
Mine is not a Titleist, but I've tested those and they're all very good. I haven't tested a bad one yet.
Yep. Yeah. Just got to get fit.
Jason, your topic, your equipment, quickie equipment topic is what?
Mine's going to be lie angle and then bounce on your wedges. So for golfers, we covered this a little bit in with Michael Neff. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly. Talk about lie angle. And what I often find is that people struggle with their wedges, their lie angle, their wedges is incorrect. And you can have them too upright and you can have them too flat. Go out, hit your wedges. If you're pulling your wedges, you can flatten them just a little bit, right? And then vice versa, if you're pushing them, get them bent up just a little bit. And it's just a quick little easy adjustment. 1 or 2 degrees of lie can be a big game changer for your wedges. So go get that tested. Don't do it on a lie board though. Those are garbage. Go hit shots and see how the ball is reacting off your club face.
Yep.
And then into that, then we go into wedges using proper bounce. So,
well, we can talk about lie angle for a little bit.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, for example, I had a student, longtime student, he just kept hitting his wedges, distance wedges. We were working on that. He was hitting a 60 degree. It kept going launch angle, 3 degrees left, 2.8 degrees left, 3.1 degrees left. I said, all right, switch your 56 for a while. I'm going to go to the restroom. I went over to the lie machine, bent it 2.5 degrees or so, came back. I said, here, I washed this. I ran this under the magic sink. Go ahead and hit them now. Bang, 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 0.2, 0.1, 0.3, you know, just bang, 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 right down the line. He said, what? What'd you do? I said, I flattened it. Just go with it. You're fine.
Where's that sink at?
Your swing was fine.
I wash all my clubs.
Your swing was fine. Your lie angle was just, you know, you're returning the handle. Just go with that, okay? I told him what it did. I said, told him what the measurements were. The lie angle on wedges, most good players benefit generally from having flatter wedges. The miss for a good player is a pull of a wedge.
Yeah.
Right. The shaft gets a little stiff. That's why a softer shaft, you know, in wedges is often a thing that we see. The wedge flex, the DG dynamic cold wedge flex is like a softer shaft than like the S300 or the X100 or everything. So Tyson, if you didn't have anything to say about lie angle, Jason can talk about bounce.
Yeah. Let's go into bounce. I think I agree with all those points for sure.
Building a great at-home practice setup has never been easier. Advances in launch monitors, cameras, training software, projectors, screens, mats, and more make getting some quality practice in more practical than ever. Tyson, Jason, and I recommend you work with the experts at Carl's Place to create your own dream home simulator or practice station, as we've done in building out our academies and studios. Carl's Place experts will take photos and measurements of your space and optimize everything to create an affordable and awesome place for you to practice and play without ever leaving your home. As thanks for listening to the Spin Axis, you can save 5% store-wide with the coupon code SPINAXIS. You've got to write it down because it's not going to be published on the web at carloveet.com. That's carloveet.com.
Yeah. So Bounce, if you're playing through, I guess this is going to come out right in the middle of like summer for us, yep. I think.
Sure.
Yeah. So you're going to get some places where it's going to have rained a lot, like in Winnipeg, and we're flooding. And you're going to get places in like North Carolina and South Carolina that are maybe in the drought and it's rock hard. And so you have to know what clubs you should be using in those conditions. So again, if it's super soft, you want more bounce. And I'm not telling you to go run out and buy in a whole nother set of wedges right now, but if you have maybe last year's wedges that are like 14 degrees of bounce and the ones you're playing right now are 6 or 4 degrees of bounce and it's sopping wet out there, just swap them out for a little bit, right? Until it dries back out. Just go get the more bounce, right? Because you're going to want some forgiveness out of how soft that turf is versus vice versa. It's super dry. You don't want a lot of bounce because you're going to kick it off the dirt and blade the crap out of your golf ball. So knowing what bounce you should be playing, one of the best things you can do to go get fit for wedges is go do a blind grind fitting. If you don't know what that is, it might be the most fun that I've ever done in a fitting. And you can do it. You don't have to, go to like an actual fitter, or you could do it at your local place. Just have the guy fitting you hand you the clubs upside down, right? So you don't look at the bounce, you don't look at the grind or anything like that. And you just hit golf shots. Start obviously around the green, because that's where you're going to, see the biggest change in it. And you're going to instantly feel the different amounts of bounce and the grind that you're getting on the clubs. Hit a couple different shots and just go like, nope, I didn't like how that interacted. I didn't like that. Well, that one felt really good. And you're going to create these two piles of like really good ones and bad ones. The bad ones are just always going to be out. The good ones now you're going to take from that, area, maybe into the rough, into the bunker. And you're just going to slowly break down into like, all right, these two here are your best. You flip them over and it's going to be X, Y, and Z, right? And those are going to be the ones, that's how you should get fit. Don't go to like, Golf Galaxy and just pick one wedge off the rack and go like, yeah, this is a 54, and then put it in your bag. Like, go get fit, because that's going to be helping you on the golf course. Sadly, you can't change your too much anyways, unless you got a grinding machine. You can't change your grinds, after you bought the wedge. So go do that. Take the time to get ones that actually help you with your game.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, but I kind of lean this way a little bit myself too. I think that the average golfer has a hard enough time learning one wedge. And by average golfer, I mean a plus one, right? Who's not working on wedges all the time, doing a bunch of work. I think that I never switch out my wedges, right? I learn what my wedges do. I learn how they react in different situations. What is firm on one hole? Like, we had a rain the other day that like settled into, it ran off because it's pretty baked out in a lot of places. So it ran into low areas where they were squishy. So in the same round of golf, on the same hole, I might have a wedge shot that's 10 yards away from another wedge shot where it goes from really, really firm to really, really squishy. And I'm not going to be able to carry two 60 degree wedges in that one round. We have bunkers that are firm. We have bunkers that are soft. We have all kinds of conditions on the golf course. I think that versatility in wedges and learning how to play different kinds of wedge shots is important. And I think that saying, I know that PGA Tour players, A, they're better than almost all of us. I don't know why I said almost. They're better than all of us listening, unless Scotty Scheffler happens to be listening to the Spin Exits podcast. Hi, Scotty.
Shots fired at all of us.
Right. So they're better than us, and they have a tour department, and they can get new wedges whenever they want, and they can spend the time to practice them. And so you will hear about them changing their wedge grinds and bounces when they go to a specific site where they're not going to have too many of these shots, or the bunkers are all going to be this one way this week or whatever. My second point is this. I think that in a lot of ways, too many people get hung up on the bounce number, and the grind to me is the more important thing. For example, a lot of wedges from some very popular wedge makers have a bounce number that's a little bit lower than what's actually stated, because maybe for marketing reasons, people think, oh, I need a low bounce this. But then they make up for it by just having a flat, wide sole. Okay. And to me, that removes versatility. One of my favorite wedges had 22 degrees of bounce. It might have been 24. It was very sharp. Like, it was clear that it had a ton of bounce, but that bounce was like less than a centimeter wide, and it had massive toe and heel relief. It was like a small crescent in the middle of the wedge, and then it fell off very quickly. So I could lay the club open, I could do toe down shots, and the bounce did not lift the leading edge very far off the ground at all. So the grind to me was more important on that wedge than the bounce number, right? It was a ridiculously high bounce number because it needed to get all of the bounce in that first three quarters of a centimeter, 7 millimeters, whatever it was, right? it had to get all of the bounce in that area, and then it fell off after that. So I think the grind is overlooked. When you said do the blind grind testing, yes, do that. Do not pay attention to the bounce number, because I can hit that 22 degree wedge off concrete if I need to. Okay, I'm decent with wedges. You know, I can hit those shots. I'm not saying everybody can just go out there and do that. But the leading edge sat very low to the ground, and I could certainly get the ball in the air with a normal shot doing that. The grind almost matters more than the bounce number itself. So don't overrate or overvalue the bounce number on the wedge. Does anybody have any pushback to the devil's advocate there?
No, I agree. The grind is for sure the most important, especially around the greens. That is the most important, especially hitting specialty shots that, like you're talking about, like that toe relief. I think it's the tee grind in particular for me is like, I would not have that club in my bag for all those like toe down chip shots around the ground. And again, without that grind, it feels terrible and I get bad results. So yeah, grind big time.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm not educated enough on it, but I've seen some of the things where they talk about the bounce number isn't actually the bounce number. It's sort of a static number that they can stamp on the bottom of that club.
It's like effective
it's effective bounce or something like that. So like you said, you know, club manufacturers are really good at marketing and selling clubs, and then golfers buy into some of those things, but no pushback there.
Yeah, I almost wish they just went high, low, medium.
Yeah.
Or high, medium, low bounce and just didn't put a number on it, because people sweat over, this is a 4. Oh, this is a 6. Dude, they're almost the same. You know, the grind is going to matter way more than that. So, Tyson, your equipment topic.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about putters. You know, this time of year, especially with my competitive players who are playing some high stake for them rounds, you know, oftentimes come in and they're like, man, I'm not making enough 10 footers. And one of the questions is always, what do you think about zero torque? What should I do? You know, people who feel like they need to make more putts, they're always searching for that putter that's going to help them make more putts. And obviously in the last few years, zero torque continues to be a very popular piece of equipment that the guys are curious about. You know, and one of the things that I will always tell a player, I'm like, listen, the only way to know is if you test it. And testing it doesn't mean going to your local golf shop and just rolling a couple putts on the green. Like, we got to measure some things and see.
That doesn't work.
If this goes in, it's going in the bag, right?
Yeah, exactly.
and, you know, we got to measure. We got to see, you know, what are the launch conditions, right? Are they better? Are they not better? You know, I think so often what I'm telling players, I'm like, from a personal perspective, I've always been a pretty decent putter, and I feel like you can give me any putter and I'm going to putt well with it. I think I have a preference. I like a little bit bigger grip. It just feels better in my hand. You can give me a mallet, you can give me a blade, you can give me anything and I'm going to putt well with it. I think the length of the putter matters more than if it's zero torque or not. I think certain people do better with a heavier putter. Some people do better with a lighter putter. So I think the weight matters more. I think when you look down, can you aim the putter that you have in your hands? Can you aim it well?
That's important.
I think people just overlook in the style, you know, does it have a center line? Does it have two lines coming off of it? Right. All those things are so important. You know, and one of the things that I tell people, it's every time I've putted with a zero torque putter, everything is right. I miss everything right. And, you know, I said, so for me, I can't aim it and I can't start my ball online. So why would I'm not going to change my stroke. Suffice the zero torque. You got to test it. And I've had so many people who put one in the bag and 2 weeks later, they go back to their gamer. I don't know what your guys' experience are with players that have come in with asking that question.
I think putting is one of the areas where technology is overwrought. Right.
Yeah.
That might not be the right word, but I think it's a flat piece of usually metal on the end of a stick. And I could putt with the head of a hammer. You know, if it's relatively flat, I could putt with that and probably putt better than a lot of people. It might not be perfect for me. It might not be the best thing ever, but I can probably putt better than a lot of people using that, especially Jason. No, he's getting better.
Getting better. You're still going to beat me, but I'm getting better.
But, you know, I think technology, like, there's not that much technology in putting. It's rolling a ball. You know, I start off a lot of putting lessons by saying, like, look, I'll have some people just to remind them. I'll, like, putt a ball through my legs. I'll putt a ball behind my back. I'll putt a ball forehanded, left-handed only with the back of the putter if it's flat. I'll be like, look, all those balls finished kind of near the hole.
Yeah.
Okay. at the end of the day, it's just rolling a ball. Let's not overcomplicate this, okay? We need to point in the right place and roll at the right distance.
Yep.
That's it. Jason?
Yeah, into like putters, the biggest thing is, yeah, fitting a putter that meets your requirements. So perfect example is I got to try out a bunch of different putters. And for me, the biggest thing that I found was that a longer back line mm-hmm. allowed me to aim better because I'm right eye dominant and I've been playing like, a little blade and the aiming points at the front of the putter. And so it makes me aim a little left. I got fit and he's like, you do realize that you're aiming or you're hitting exactly where you're aiming. And I was like, no. He's like, yeah, you're aiming like left edge of every putt and you're pulling it to the left. And he's like, we just need to get you to aim like a little bit right. He's like, let's go through some putters. So we go through some putters and voila, this one with a really long line on the back gets me to see my right eye. And all of a sudden he's like, man, that's the best aim that you've been able to get the ball on a start line. And then outside, obviously getting a putter is feeling confident with it. And then to be honest with you, it's just speed and line. Man, when we did our golf trip, our golf camp, it was amazing. But being able to play with so many students over those times, it was amazing at how bad some of the reads are. You know what I mean? It's not the putter.
Yeah.
It's the person going like, I'm going to putt this ball to this spot. You could, do with a metal mallet or a hammer or, 2x4, and it wouldn't have mattered what you were holding because your intent of putting the ball to this spot was poor. And so that's where you're going to three putt a lot. The amount of, putts where it was like, all right, where do you see this? And they're like, I see it about a cup outside right. And I'm like, okay. And where are you trying to get the ball to stop? I'm maybe about a foot short. And this is like a 30-foot downhill putt. And I'm like, well, my spot that I'm trying to putt it is about 6 feet right of the cup and about halfway to the hole. And they just look at me like I'm got, three eyes. And I said, well, just putt your ball and we'll see where it goes. And they putt it and they miss it low left and it still rolls out, 14 feet. And I'm like, well, if you had hit like the proper speed, you would have been, 14 feet low left of a breaking hole, or breaking putt. And so if you can learn how to read greens and get good speed control to your read, you're going to make more two putts for sure. And then you're going to be closer to the hole. So then you're going to make more shorter putts that a zero torque putter is not going to help with that.
Yep.
Again, still the individual.
Yeah. I have two things to say to wrap that up. I think that people often, if they aim right for a while and they push a bunch of putts and they find a putter that they aim left for a while, it kind of fits their push bias.
Yep.
Or they aim straight and they start pushing a bunch of putts because of their stroke. They find a putter that they aim left and they push strokes onto the start line and they make them for a while. But then when that tendency goes away, then they start to pull putts because they actually aim it left. And then I also think that putting is about confidence for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so if they believe, oh, the zero torque, this is going to solve my putting, it works for a while.
That's right.
Or whatever. You could tell them it has magic jelly beans or you ran it under a magic sink.
Yep.
Okay, for a while.
Magic sink again. Yep. I got to get me one of those.
And they would be like, oh, okay, this is great. This is awesome. I actually did bend the guy's wedge. I did not just lie and say, I fixed it for you. You'll hit him straight now. But I probably could have, and he might have hit it straight. I don't know. Works better with putters than wedges. But, putting is about confidence. So I think there is something to that, to where sure. If you believe that this is going to make you a better putter, you're like, aha, yeah, okay. It just frees you up to roll the ball again. Yeah, to get
you're
back
also
to
not
going to
make a timid stroke on it. Not right. To call out all those people with yips, but you're so worried about missing the putt that you can't make the putt.
Right.
Yep.
Just roll it over a spot and the outcome. I mean, golf's putting is so hard. Like you could putt the ball on the right line with the right amount of like pace and it hits like a blade of grass.
Putting is luck.
Yeah. Or an old pitch
putting
mark.
Is a lot of luck. Like, there's a lot of randomness in putting. Yes. I agree with that.
Especially later in the day too.
I like what David Orr said when we had him on, a lot of people say putting's the easiest thing we can do in any sport, but it's also the most precise thing we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, it's easy, but it's hard to be good at it too at the same time.
I think it's the easiest part of golf.
Yeah. For sure.
Pull there. I think that's true. Jason might disagree.
Yeah. It's hard. Well, I mean, it's hard to putt the ball out of bounds.
Before we go on a tyrant on this, let's go ahead and tell the people where they can find us.
You can find us on all social medias at thespinaxis.com. Let us know if any of this helps you out with your game. And then you can find us online at thespinaxis.com.
And you can find Jason on the putting green
every day.